Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Milan Wagle. Milan is the Chief Information Officer of Equinix, a global platform company focused on enabling the world's leading businesses to directly connect with their customers, clouds, employees, and partners through their interconnection offering. As CIO, Milan has set five priorities, the most important of which is centered around information security and ensuring that Equinix's IT infrastructure operations run smoothly. Prior to Equinix, Milan was the Director of Global IT Applications at VeriSign. In this interview, Milan stresses the importance of creating positive customer experience. Equinix's core value is to put the customer at the center of everything that they do, and the company has laid out a recipe for customer focus and success consisting of five major components, which are treating their customers like assets, looking at the entire life cycle of customers, building a customer listening system to receive feedback, using a prioritization system to interpret that feedback, and delivering that feedback to the entire organization. We also discuss how the company's annual revenue grew from $1 billion to $5 billion over an eight-year period, the importance of a culture of digital transformation, and Milan's view on artificial intelligence and machine learning. Milan, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
It's a pleasure. Looking forward to this conversation.
Likewise, Milan, I am as well.
Thank you so much. I thought we'd begin with Equinix, your company, and the company which you are Chief Information Officer. For those who might not be familiar with it, could you provide in your own words a brief overview as to the business you are in?
Absolutely. So Equinix basically is a global interconnection platform company. And what we essentially do is we enable the world's like leading businesses to directly connect with their customers, their clouds, their employees, their partners through an interconnection offering that that we've developed. And we do this on top of our data center platform. We have about 200 data centers across five continents and 24 countries that that enable this this interconnection platform. And the company was basically founded about 20 years ago with the original objective to just give a neutral place for the networks who were forming the early internet to exchange data traffic. And as you can imagine, like since then, just the challenges of scaling the internet have just created a heightened need for companies to bypass like the public internet and connect more securely and privately with each other to exchange data. So that's what we enable digital businesses to do. In fact, we have, as of last year, we have something called as the Global Interconnection Index. And that's what we use to report, you know, how much private exchange of data is happening between digital businesses. So that's what we do in a nutshell. And if I had to like even summarize this further, sort of like what's our role in as a company in enabling digital interactions, I would say just think about your daily routine activities that, you know, everyone engages in these days, like checking your Facebook or sending emails or streaming a movie on Netflix, doing some online shopping, booking Uber, whatever those interactions are. To deliver those digital experiences seamlessly, there's a whole bunch of like complex infrastructure and data exchange that happens in the background. And that's where our interconnection platform enables all these companies to deliver those experiences to their end users. So that's in a nutshell what we do.
And I'd love to, I want to actually dive into that a little bit further in some of the lessons from the reports that you're developing and the data that you are putting together. But I also wanted to talk to you a bit about your role as CIO. You've been in that role for a couple of years now. You're in the unusual situation of succeeding a leader who remained with the company. Typically, when one either is promoted into the CIO role or comes into a company as the new CIO, the predecessor has left. And I'm curious, actually, what that transition was like with a predecessor who remained. That's Brian Lilly, who went on to become the chief customer officer, now the chief product officer of Equinix. What was it like to succeed a leader who remained with the organization?
That's a great question. So I've been with Equinix about 8 years now, and 2 years in the CIO role, like you said. And my predecessor was tapped to move on and run a different role for the company. So he was tapped to become the chief customer officer at that time. Also a story about how CIOs and their roles are evolving and how they're getting tapped into other parts of the business. But when Brian moved on to become the chief customer officer, there was a search initiated to find the next CIO in the company. And I went through a process, an interview process, and got selected through that process. And it was very interesting to have my predecessor still available in the company. So it was good from a mentorship standpoint that the guy who had made some of these strategic decisions for IT was still available if I needed access to him. It was interesting because, like, the boss relationship had changed to a peer and a customer relationship, if you will. So we went through that transition for a little bit. And then initially, I mean, I think we just had to work out, you know, the decision rights between him and myself as he was transitioning into the new role. And we sat down and we just, you know, looked at all the decisions that a CCO and a CIO and a chief digital officer would make. And we sort of just made an inventory of those decisions and came to an agreement on who would make those decisions and who had the D, as we called it, on some of those items. But having access to him in the company was frankly very beneficial for me, especially as a rookie CIO, a first time CIO of a company. And it also got interesting in certain aspects when we had to look at certain platform decisions and in some cases, you know, maybe reverse some legacy decisions that were made. And so we worked very well and collaborated to make them happen.
Excellent. Yeah, and as you developed your first strategy and have continued to operate against strategies of your own creation, to what extent were they sort of a continuity or a continuation, I should say, of the plans? Of course, you were a member of the leadership team, as you pointed out. You weren't new to the company and taking on the role, and therefore a continuation of the plans that you yourself were helping to enact prior to becoming CIO versus sending things in a new direction or bending things in, you know, left or right, as the case might be?
I think it was a combination of both, to be honest. Firstly, because I was very lucky to have inherited an IT function and an IT organization that was well respected. The operations were running smoothly. And, you know, when CIOs typically get tapped to or get hired to turn around IT organizations and their relationships with business stakeholders in certain situations, I did not have to deal with any of those issues. So from that standpoint, there were some strategies that had worked in the past that Brian had implemented that I decided to pursue. Where it helped for me to define my own voice and my own direction was with some of the go forward stuff and the opportunities that we had. And we got an opportunity to put some fresh eyes onto how we were going to take some of our transformation initiatives going forward and how would we modify those. So I got an option to sort of like define what those were, and I collaborated with my peers in the C-suite, with my predecessor, some of the new stakeholders that had joined the exec team. So it was a collaboration exercise to just sort of validate where I wanted to take the IT organization, and got tons of good feedback, made some adjustments, and that's how we defined our go-forward strategy.
And can you talk a bit about the substance of it as it currently stands? What are some of the areas that you and the team are focused on?
So if I had to summarize like my top five priorities, I would say there are two priorities which I would call table stake priorities. And then there are three which are very strategic for the company, which IT has helping drive with our business partners. And the first two table stake priorities, I would say, are number one on my list is info security. And as you know, the threats and the world that we live in is changing very dramatically. So just like the continuous improvement of our cyber resilience to protect the digital assets of our company is my number one priority. Just so that we become much more cyber resilient and we just take our security posture to the next level. The number two, I think also table stakes for all CIOs is to make sure that the operations of the IT infrastructure runs very smoothly. And so the number two that I put on the list is operating the IT infrastructure and maintaining our SLAs and driving continuous sort of automation and standardization in this process to just take our operations maturity to the next level. And I almost say security and operations are table stakes, because if you don't do these two things right, you don't get to have a conversation with the CEO and some of your other executives on doing some of the more quote-unquote cooler strategic stuff. So having said that, the three strategic things for me on the list are first and foremost is just an experience transformation for the company. And this experience transformation is for our customers as well as employees. And I'll talk about some specific projects that we're doing in that space. The second thing is around just enabling scale and efficiency for the company. If you've seen our growth trajectory, we're on a pretty healthy growth path, but we also want to make sure that in that process, we are not increasing our operating costs at the same trajectory as our revenue. So there are some priorities around just making our internal operations and business much more efficient. And so enabling speed, scale in those processes and policies and our technology platforms is the second transformative priority that I have. And the lastly, I would say is last but definitely not the least is intelligence. This has historically been an underinvested area for us, just around enabling analytics and data science and operational intelligence for the company. So we're making some investments here to just take our operational predictive and prescriptive analytics and intelligence to the next level to enable our business to make just better decisions.
Excellent. All important categories, to say the least. I want to return actually to some points you were making earlier on regarding just the more the organization's development of insights around digital interactions. As you point out, the organization has been on a very healthy growth clip, and part of it is the fact that you are in a part of the business that is in such high demand among organizations. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the insights that you've been able to garner by virtue of reviewing some of the reports that you mentioned are generated to help organizations sort of monitor and analyze and assess their digital interactions, and the extent to which you do the same for your own company, the extent to which the organization's using its own sort of products at the same time.
Yeah, so what we're witnessing in the market, and which is what the Global Interconnection Index helps us monitor and report to the street, is if you look at the secular trends that we are witnessing around, whether it's cloud data storage or number of mobile devices that are getting connected to the internet, the amount of content that is getting created, all of these are they touch the Equinix platform in some shape or form. And the reason why that happens is because we have close to 90, almost 10,000 customers now in our portfolio. We have 1,800 networks. We host about almost 3,000 of the cloud service providers and IT service providers. And so all the interaction that happens in our data centers is witnessed by us in terms of just like how much traffic and data is getting created by digital enterprises all across the globe. And those secular trends, honestly, are the reasons why our growth has been so stellar in the past like few years. And then translating that to internal, we are a reflection of what's happening in the industry. Because when I joined the company, as an example, 8 years ago, we were south of $1 billion in revenue, and there were probably 1,100 employees or something like that. And you fast forward 8 years, we're going to exit this year. We have publicly declared that we're going to be about a $5 billion revenue company. And we support about 8,000 employees in the company globally now across 24 countries. And so we witnessed this growth of devices and data and storage and performance needs that need to be delivered, the experiences that we need to create for our employees and our customers. All those challenges that we witness in the industries are also challenges for us as well. And that has helped sort of focus our digital transformation priorities, because we are not unique. And so the earlier priorities that I mentioned were in response to all that secular trends that we are witnessing even within our own four walls.
Mm. You talked about one of your other imperatives being experience transformation, and you highlighted the fact that it's both internally but also externally with customers. And I'd love to actually get your perspective. You talked about how there were some projects you might be able to highlight in order to peel back the onion, so to say, on that topic. Would you mind doing so?
Absolutely. So first off, I would say, having worked as a consultant before in prior lives and having experienced multiple sort of work and corporate environments in the United States especially, I haven't seen a more customer-focused culture than Equinix personally. Every company, I think, is customer-focused to an extent, but I think we take that to a whole new level. And starting from the C-suite all the way down to the employees, there's just a strong emphasis on customer focus. And we do that by, you know, like there are brand ambassador training programs within the company, as an example, that just like, you know, drive that point home. If you look at our company values that we communicate to our employees and live by, and every meeting, every all hands meeting is open with those value statements. If you look at those values, the one in the center says we put the customer at the center of everything that we do. And we try to live by this value as much as we can. So if you look at the recipe for our sort of customer focus and our customer success, I would say there are five things that we do. One is, firstly, we treat our customers like assets. And so, you know, assets require nurturing and investment and relationship building. So that's number one. The second thing that we do is align around the full customer experience. So we look at the entire life cycle of a customer. We look at all the touch points that happen in their life cycle, where basically what we call they have moments of truth, where they could have a make or break interaction with Equinix that could, you know, either solidify their relationship or could sour their relationship. So what are some of those touch points and how do they get affected? We have a customer listening system that we are building now to just like get better insights into our customers and what they're feeling and what their sentiments are about us. And this customer listening system, in essence, has two elements to it. There's aided feedback analysis. So when we issue surveys or get feedback directly from customers and customer advisory boards, or there are other interactions that happen in conferences and we collect that structured feedback, all of that is now fed to a customer listening system so that we can understand what they like about us and where we have opportunities to improve. And now we are working on taking this aided listening and adding unaided listening to our customer insights. And what I mean by that is, Our belief is that there are certain areas where we have insights about our processes and what actions in our processes could potentially positively or negatively impact a customer interaction. And so we want to glean from that insight internally and proactively notify our customer-facing team so they have an opportunity to action a particular issue, as an example, in advance so that they can manage those relationships better. And I'll give a very specific example on this front. Like, there used to be a feedback area from our customers in some of our surveys, which said, like, in certain pockets of our geographies, the quotes would come out delayed than the customer would prefer. And so our objective was to look at this data internally and define service levels for some of these things. And if there was a need to then notify an account rep or a customer facing rep, we have now the ability to sort of go and action it with them. So that's the third priority for us around just like building a customer listening system. And then once we get this feedback, there's a whole prioritization that happens on this feedback. And through this process, we've identified what are known as customer experience improvement initiatives. We call them CXIs internally. And IT is a big partner of the chief customer officer in delivering those customer experience improvement initiatives, because almost each one of those processes where we have been identified as an improvement area has an IT interaction or a technology interaction. So we're taking the leadership with our business partners to then just like enhance the experience for our customers. And lastly, just like there's a lot of focus on building a one customer centric company culture all the way from our CEO down to technicians who run our data centers and install our cages and install cross connects all the way from top to bottom. We are trying to create this just one customer centric company. And our goal is to then deliver these insights from our customer listening system to the entire company so that they have visibility into sort of what's happening with our interactions with the customers, and they can action their respective areas proactively.
Very interesting. I want to stick with that topic of culture for a moment, because I've read some of your writings about the importance of culture in digital transformation. That it's often an afterthought, or perhaps not even thought about, certainly not adequately, or at the same level as the process and technology changes that are necessary when transforming the business. Can you talk a bit about some of your perspectives there as it pertains, of course, to Equinix, but also as you've seen with the customers whose digital transformation you've also facilitated, or the company has anyway?
Absolutely. And I'll talk using a specific example where I got to personally drive a massive business transformation program for the company. And in fact, if I had to give credit to sort of why I got picked for the CIO role amongst other candidates, I would say my experience running this massive global business transformation program for Equinix was one of the reasons why I got the edge in the selection process. So I'll talk a little bit about what that program was and how culture played a role in delivering the impact that that program promised. So first off, prior to the launch of this program, by the way, it was called the Equinix Customer One program. We did businesses as a three-region company under the Equinix brand for all intents and purposes. And what we were noticing was the customers who were deployed with us in more than one region was very steadily increasing. At that time, I think our multi-region deployments for customers was like about 59% of our revenues or something like that. And in today's world, it's about almost 80% of our revenues now come from customers who have been deployed with us in more than one region. And these global customers at that time were giving us this feedback that their experience working with us in different geographies was inconsistent. And including the organizational touch points that they would have with Equinix. And so our CEO had that insight at that time to say, like, we're going to just like drive a big business transformation to transform our quote to cash processes globally, and we're going to deliver a consistent process and a consistent set of systems and technology and align our organizational structures to deliver that. And also a testament to how the role of a CIO is changing in there. The executive that they picked to be the sponsor for that program was Brian Lilly, the former CIO. And so he was the sponsor, and he was looking for a deputy to run this program on a day-to-day basis. And I was running the IT applications team at that time, and I said, you know, let me just put my hat into the ring for this role, because it would have been like the biggest and the most complex program that I would have undertaken in my professional life, doing rip and replace of business processes and systems for about 14 countries and touching 85% of our employee population. And so I volunteered, and I joke about this and say that I used to be a 6'8" person back then with jet black hair, and and I've like going through that program was personally transformational for me, because it got me firsthand view into how the business operated. So I gained business acumen and how our products and services were sold across the globe in a level of detail that I had not had prior to that before. I got a firsthand exposure to the business processes and the challenges that we had in those business processes. And then just like even looking at the organizational structures that we had and figuring out how to optimize our org structures to deliver the best experience. That was something that I got to do through that program. And the relationships that I built across the globe, across functions at various levels of the organization, ultimately helped me, I think, get my CIO role, because that experience was like very, very beneficial for the company. And we created massive amounts of impact through that process, because when this program was launched, and it was one of the hardest things that I had done in my professional life, but when I look at now and the size of our company and the mergers and acquisitions that we've done and the organic growth that we've seen, the platform that we deployed 4 years ago has enabled us to basically double the size of the company. And we had the foresight, or our executive team had the foresight back then, to pursue this at a time when the company was doing really well and there was no real driver to go and, you know, create internal disruption to deploy such a huge transformational program. But we chose to do it because we were thinking 5 years out, 7 years out. And so that was very rewarding for me. And I'm like, when I look back, seeing the company sort of double on the back of this platform is personally very rewarding for me.
Fantastic. Yeah, what a great story, and very interesting the connection between a very complex set of activities that went quite well, and your thought, at least, that's one of the reasons why you have your current role. I wanted to actually also ask you, Milind, here towards the conclusion of our conversation, about some tech trends that are particularly exciting for you. We've talked about a number of them already. But I wonder, are there others that are beginning to make their way onto your strategic roadmap that you and the team are particularly excited about?
I am particularly excited about just watching what's happening in the artificial intelligence and machine learning and data science space. And it's something I've written about, and we are what I would say in the experimental stages of consuming those trends. When I look at AI and machine learning, they remind me of where cloud and mobility and these technologies were about 10, 12 years ago, because there was a lot of hype and, you know, enterprises like ours had to really figure out what's real, what's not. And I feel AI and machine learning is going through that phase right now. And so we are watching this space very closely, because I personally believe that these technologies are going to be very, very mainstream in the next 2 to 3 years. And just like looking at the number of companies that I deal with on a weekly basis who have some sort of AI offering, or even looking at the technologies that are in our existing portfolio and seeing the plans that they have in place to AI enable their workflows and their services is something very, very, very exciting for us. And like most CIOs who have to deliver technologies, I think there's a build versus buy angle that will come into AI technologies as well. And like we will have to make decisions on where it makes sense to just maybe consume an AI-enabled product or service in our portfolio versus investing in building our own skill set and teams around it. So those are two that I'm personally excited about, and we're working on a couple of use cases to implement and consume some of these emerging technologies.
That's fantastic. Well, Milan Wagle, thank you so much for taking time with me on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been great speaking with you, and great garnering a variety of insights from your own personal growth within the organization, as well as the extraordinary growth that the company has experienced during your time with it. So thank you for the conversation.
Thank you, Peter, for having me on this podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Likewise.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join us next week when my guest will be Max Tegmark, the author of the book Life 3.0, Being Human in the Age of Artificial Intelligence.